Recruiting season is in full swing and spring practices are about to start, but we hope you pretend for football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear today. No Tim Preston today. But you guys can find us and our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. We're going to be going over today Snoop Roach, you know, taking another hiatus from the team for a while. We'll see how long that is. We'll talk about what it means, the Oklahoma loss, and if it even matters. And then the next three-game stretch against Baylor, Iowa State, and Tech. What's the best-case scenario? What's the worst-case scenario? And what's a realistic expectation? So, let's go ahead and get into Pretend You're Getting to Know Us, as we always do. And, Johnny, I think we're going to like this one today.
All right.
Because, yeah, I mean, actually, we'll see. We'll see. The verdict is out. But, Tim, we know you're out there listening to us. We know you had an emergency tonight, so you couldn't come. I'm not sexually, but we know
he definitely can come.
I mean, hey, you know best. You know him best, Johnny. You know him best.
We've been friends for a long time. We've shared a lot of secrets.
Long.
Yes.
So today, because you're listening to us, Tim, we're gonna do Pretend You're Getting to Know Us as what is our favorite thing about Timothy Preston? And I'll start off this one because Tim, I think that my favorite thing about you is your unconditional love for people that you barely know. You have such a high opinion of people that you don't really know, and you always try to see the best in people. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. I heard it. Yeah.
I think Tim always needs friends. Tim loves friends. So that was my girlfriend making a
fondue.
A guest appearance.
Oh, all right.
So, Tim, what I love about you is just how friendly you are, how you treat people, and just your unconditional love for people that are not in your family. Johnny, I know yours is also going to be as heartwarming as mine. What is your favorite thing about Tim?
Well, I feel like it's incumbent upon me to register my disappointment in that Tim has been suspended for the podcast for testing positive for smoking weed, and I really would
Johnny,
think
we weren't supposed to say that.
It's supposed to be an
undisclosed suspension.
There's no HIPAA laws in podcasts, man. Like this is we are all you know independent contractors, so this is how it's gonna be. Like Tim is out there just trying to make his way through the Iowa winter, which is desolate and terrible, and claims the life of many, many people and the souls of even more. So I get it. You know, you want to relieve your crushing depression of having to live in a state that stopped evolving in 1983. But come on, man, you know, we got these tests we got to take. So I really wish you would maybe just like, it's coming. So 72 hours, just drink a bunch of water. And
this isn't on, you know, this isn't our decision.
No,
we didn't make it the podcast. It's the person who owns Hornscast's decision. So it's actually is my decision.
Dick.
So it was my decision to suspend him. And I'm currently appealing with myself the decision.
Yeah, there's so my favorite thing.
Tim is suspended indefinitely, but we think he'll come back.
Yeah, at some point. Maybe before the Baylor game. Probably not. My favorite thing about Tim is that the drunker he gets, the more likely he is to reference cock in insults. Like, he's already someone who tends to reference it more than you would expect from a heterosexual male with several children. But when he drinks, he talks about cock a lot. And balls.
He reverses down to the phallic stage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's very much in the Freud id stage after the fourth whiskey and coke. So,
which he usually gets to on the podcast.
Yeah.
Pretty fast.
By the end of Pretend You're Getting to Know Us. That's the fourth one. It's, you know, by the time he's done with this thing, it's at a baker's dozen, give or take. So,
Johnny, have you ever known Tim without having him having a Coke and whiskey beforehand? Have you ever met him like before that?
Do we know who the real Tim is? I mean, it was, you know, we were on our way to get drinks, but it was, he was at that point, at least, from my view, sober. So, I mean, again, he lives in Iowa, so he's got a healthy metabolism when it comes to alcohol. So he might be three drinks in, and you just don't know. Like, that's just him. Like, he's got sort of
the water in Iowa is actually vodka.
Yeah, his he has a natural swerve that you might think was drunkenness, but he's perfectly lucid. So you're like, all right, let's go get a drink. It's great.
Yeah. Again, very disappointed in his suspension.
He's
really, really letting the team down.
He is. Selfish son of a bitch. You should know better by this point.
But on an unrelated note, Snoop Roach, Kerwin Roach, has been indefinitely suspended.
Wait, for what?
For undisclosed reasons.
Right.
So let's go ahead and talk about that. Johnny, what is his absence going to do to this team?
Well, there's going to be a lot less requests to watch Half-Baked on the plane trips. That's probably number one.
I like how we're trying to hide everything.
Yeah, it's been a rough week. I'm out of subtlety. So the biggest thing that Texas will lack with him out is they will lack a guy who can reasonably reliably get his own shot. There are a number of guys on this team who are good shooters when put in specific situations. They are solid at certain aspects of the game, whether it's Hayes and lobs and putbacks, or whether it's Osikowski and rebounds, or, you know, like there are different skill sets among the team. But when everything breaks down, the only guy on the team who can go just get his own shot, create his own shot reliably, is Roach. And without him there, their margin for error gets that much smaller. Their ability to bail out late clock situations gets that much smaller. And just generally speaking, it's, you know, you always want athletes of that caliber on the court if you can get them, provided they do the right thing. So maybe not end of game situations, but other than that.
And I think one thing that you might have missed though with Kerwin Roach, and one thing that might actually be one of the more important things for Texas over the past few games, is he's a plus defender. He is a very, very good defensive player, often overshadowed this year by some of the questionable things he does on offense. But he's, you know, throughout his career at Texas, he's been an incredible defensive player. Texas, these past few games, has kind of lacked in the defensive department, especially against Oklahoma, where it just at times seemed like nobody was playing defense on each other. Oklahoma was shooting 48% from the field, could do basically anything when they went into the lane. Yeah, having a plus defender out there could solve a lot of the defensive issues Texas has had, but now you don't have even that to lean on.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think he has been as good a defender this year as he was at times last year. I think when he is dialed in and he is really focused on defense and really getting after it, then yes, he is absolutely a plus defender. And they could have used that against Oklahoma. Although I think with Oklahoma, the issues were more that the defense just wasn't communicating. They weren't talking to each other. And so they kept getting beat on overhelping off of their man. They kept getting beat off of fairly simple actions that for most of the season they have been able to defend well. And they just were completely out of sorts. And, you know, some of that is probably solved simply by him being on the court, because then the rotation that they're throwing out there is much more what they're used to being around. Like, you right. know, Gerald Liddell is not on the court much when Snoop is playing 30 minutes a game.
Right.
And there was some of that game that felt like that the coaching staff was sort of trying things to see who brought the proper energy, who brought the who was communicating better, some of it was just them sort of, I don't know, they're just throwing shit against the wall to see what sticks, because they were terrible defensively in the first half against Oklahoma. So,
yeah,
I mean, even a replacement level Snoop Roach probably helps the situation somewhat.
But you're not relying on Eli Mucho-Long to help take up some of the slack on the defensive side of the ball.
You mean defensive stopper Eli Mucho-Long?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah, no, that's fair. It just, there are consequences that beget more consequences that beget more consequences that all come from, hey, I'm going to take one of your two or three best guys on the team off the team. And there's a reshuffling.
What is that? How many years in a row is that?
His third. Yeah.
Four to four? No, because you lost Cam Ridley.
Yeah.
So it's 4-4. Out of four for Shaka Smart.
Yeah.
That bad luck thing from Ken Pom, that bad luck stat, is probably just Shaka Smart's luck leaking into this team at this point.
Yeah, there's a person I talked to about basketball, about college stuff, that he's very in tune with this, and he did not want to be named, so I will not name him, but his quote was...
Rick Barnes?
If I had Rick Barnes' phone number and he answered it, I would not be on this podcast because I would be calling him constantly. No, he said...
And that's why you don't have Rick Barnes' phone number.
Yeah, probably. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like, hey, Rick, what's up? How's it going? I know it's in the middle of the season, but I just want to talk to you about the zone. Yes. So
I ate this really good cookie today. I should let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you tried ribs? Do you like ribs? Now there's a guy I talked to who he said, basically, when you see a guy get shit on by a bird, you're like, damn, that's unlucky. But when the same guy continues to get shit on by birds over and over again, at some point you got to go, this guy's just going to keep getting shit on by birds. Like, whether he's doing something to deserve it or not, it's just going to keep happening. And so he's like, I don't know if that's what it is with Shaka. If he's just going to keep getting shit on by birds for the rest of his tenure.
Yeah, it's just a thing for Shaka Smart at this point.
It is, which means that, like, he'll probably, you know, like, get fired at Texas, and then he will go coach, like, you know, Loyola Marymount to their first national title, because he will have gotten it all out of his system at Texas.
He's just getting, yeah, exactly. Did he shadow a mirror or some shit? Like, which did he shut the door on who was trying to ask for money?
Like, I think, yeah, it's the Steve Patterson curse. I don't know.
Man. That's what it is.
Maybe that's the pregame ritual, is they just walk into a locker room and we're like, fucking take that mirror out. We're gonna just gonna shatter that fucking mirror. Like, I don't believe in this.
We gotta step
I don't believe
on all
in these.
The cracks. All the cracks. If you don't step on a crack, we're doing sprints.
Yes.
But
and those sprints will be nothing but on cracks.
So more sprints on sprints. Yeah. This is gonna get exponential. But talking about Shaka Smart, he hinted at Curran Roach coming back, but it seems like it's Chris Del Conte that is the reason. It's a school rule that he broke, and his status is a little bit up in the air. How long are we actually expecting him out for? What is the realistic thought here?
So, based off of what I've you know, read and heard, it sounds very unlikely that Roach will be back in time for Baylor. Beyond that, who knows? That is the $1 million question. Literally
in
the $1 million
one day,
question.
But yeah.
Yeah. So it sounded like, I mean, if you read the tea leaves, it sounds like it is. Shaka is not one to artificially inflate hopes when it comes to press conferences. Like, he will say what he thinks, and he is generally, like, fairly honest with at least his view of things. So if he doesn't think a guy is coming back, he will speak in a way which lets you know that you should not expect this guy back. So the fact that everything is so open-ended with Roach makes me think that there is a good chance he is back at some point this year. Now the question becomes,
or that he just doesn't know at this point.
It could be, but he's
very up in the air.
He's so measured with what he says that he's not one to generally say he's not one to leave the door open if he doesn't think there's a realistic chance it could happen. Like,
okay,
that his my impression of the way he talks is if he doesn't think it's going to happen, he's not going to try and leave that door open. So I would think that he is probably expecting Roach back at some point, and there's probably some sort of background negotiation going on between, you know, the basketball program and Del Conte and whoever other stakeholders there are in the university as to how many games this is. Is this the rest of the regular season? Is this two or three games? Is this, you know, like there's probably a lot of haggling going on in the background that we don't know about. So, I mean, I would say don't expect him back for Baylor. And beyond that, you know, it'll be game to game. You just sort of got to read the tea leaves of the things Shaka says.
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I'm not saying this sort of in a, I know what they're doing. I wonder what they're haggling with. Like, how are they haggling? If we get this, if it happens again, we won't come to you and beg.
Yeah, there's, when you are a guy like Del Conte, who is dealing with much bigger issues than this individual player.
We'll stop hounding you if you...
Yeah, like, we will let him come back in the next game if you shave a year off of your guaranteed deal. Like, I don't know, who knows? You know, a guy like Del Conte seems to be pretty reliably bigger picture. Right. With all of this sort of thing. So I imagine what he is dealing with right now is some sort of, he doesn't want to set a precedent that he can't maintain down the road. And it may be as much as anything a way of trying to true up what happens in like football versus basketball or baseball versus basketball, like sort of, you know, one game here equals two games there or that sort of thing. So maybe that's what they're trying to figure out as a way to keep this as consistent as possible across the, you know, the revenue sports, I guess I'll say. So, I mean, you know, maybe that's what this is they are back there opening up pivot tables in their spreadsheets, trying to figure out what equals what and what is the, you know, reasonable amount for a guy who is, this is his, what, third suspension in 4 years. So what, how much leniency do you give that guy?
Man, I wish I loved somebody as much as Roach loves suspensions.
Yeah. If he loves suspensions as much as he loved physics, he would be the lead engineer at Tesla right now.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Sending a car into space.
Yeah.
You know, while we're speculating over whether Roach comes or whether he stays, is it time to move on from Corwin Roach at this point? You've said it. It's his third suspension in, I think, 2 years, actually. It's been just an up and down road with him on the floor. Is it time to move on to see what Texas has coming up the pipeline? Or can we still hold on to hope and say, hey, this guy is something special?
You know, I mean, it's a typical question. And I guess if I was getting paid $3 million a year,
there's no politically correct way to answer this question.
No, it's so I guess the thing, I mean, it's not so much political correctness as it is balancing short term versus long term here. Like,
right.
Roach is not here for more than half a dozen or so more games. Like, this is his senior year. He's done after the year. So the question here is, do you think bringing him back, if I'm Shaka here, my thoughts process are, or maybe this is Del Conte's thought process as well, is bringing him back for another 5 to 7, 5 to 8 games, depending on tournaments and whatnot, is going to do enough to improve this program and its outlook that it will offset the consequences of being lenient on a star player.
Okay.
Like, he's
the same.
Yeah, I mean, he is inarguably one of the two or three best players at this moment on Texas. So, you know, maybe consider this like in football terms, like, I don't know, if Colin Johnson got popped for something or or Keontae Ingram, something like that. Like, how do you deal consider? Yeah. And so, you know, personally, me being the person who has no financial stake in this, I'm fine if he doesn't play again. I mean, it sucks because it means that you are lowering the ceiling on the season, because this team is better with him than without him. I don't want to close the door on the guy, but he sort of closed it on himself. And so you need to have the ability for someone to rehabilitate and redeem themselves, but you also have to understand that some people don't learn lessons. And whether or not he's learning the proper lessons is very much up for debate right now. Like, you know, he is making mistakes that have suspended him, but he is also on track to graduate from UT. So, like, there are some things he's doing better than others, apparently. And it's the same way on the court. Like, he has played good offensive games. He's played bad offensive games. He's played stellar defensive games. He's had some other defensive games where he's not been so good. Like, so it's always been up and down with him. And being that he's a senior, it feels like this is a point where you kind of say, we know what you are at this point. Maybe, you know, maybe 5 years down the road, you figure things out in the G League and become an NBA player or something. I don't know. But like, in terms of the college decision, it's not an easy one.
No, not at all.
And I don't envy the coaching staff. I don't envy the athletic department, even though this is their job to sort of figure these things out. He is one of those guys you can make a good case for bringing him back. You can make a good case for never bringing him back, or anywhere in between.
I think it's pretty similar to what Texas had in Chris Boyd on the football side.
Yeah.
Where Chris Boyd, there is a, you know, he's taken a lot of abuse from the press. He's taken a lot of abuse from fans. And when you didn't have him on the field against Oklahoma State, you start off with a, 21-point deficit.
Mm.
So he makes a lot of mistakes. He makes a ton of mistakes, but you need him, at least at this point, because you don't have anything to replace him with. Or do you? If you do have to replace him, you know, short term or long term, I mean, you do have to replace him. How do you do it if you're Texas? I guess my reaction to that would be, you see, if you're using Courtney Ramey or Matt Coleman, the first few minutes of the game, who's on fire for that day, and then say, all right, this is your game. Go ahead and take over.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the way the team is constructed, you already saw a pretty significant amount of this team being, or this game by game being run by some combination of Coleman and Ramey, and Roach was one of the main ball handlers, but he was not the exclusive ball handler. Like, I feel like this loss in some ways would be a lot more profound if it was like Matt Coleman, because he is a steadier influence. He's steadier with the ball than Roach is. You know, he's not a panacea. There's pros and cons to it. But when it comes to a situation like this, I don't think the change is so much with Coleman and Ramey as it is with Jace Febres, with Eli Long, with, to a lesser extent, Gerald Liddell. Like, they have less depth at the guard position, particularly sort of that 2-3 spot, that sort of guard/wing spots. So then the question becomes, okay, do you start rolling two bigs out there more often? Like, do you have more time with Hayes and Osakowski out there?
Royce and Ham little, and
what's that?
Royce Ham and Sims.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah. Maybe or, yeah, some out there. I'll get say bigger. Hayes. Yeah, I'll say Hayes, but you know, they're more bigs is maybe a fair way of putting it. Those guys start to soak up some of the minutes, because right now, effectively, what the coaching staff is trying to do is they are trying to replace 30 to 34 minutes of production in a game. and that is going to get spread around to various people. Like, I'm sure Osakowski's going to play a couple more minutes a game. Hayes and Sims and Ham, if they can stay away from the foul trouble, they will soak up a few minutes. Fabrez is obviously going to get more minutes because if you watch the Oklahoma game, he's clearly got a significant amount more minutes. And Coleman and Ramey are in some ways the least affected of the group because they've already had the ball in their hands a ton. They will continue to have it in their hands a ton. They might have it a little more than normal. So like a guy like Long might see, you know, provided you get the good Eli instead of the full Eli. If you get the good Eli, you get 10 to 15 minutes of him a game and he soaks up some of those minutes. And I think that's part of what you saw in the first half with Oklahoma is them trying different ideas of how are we going to soak up these minutes? How are we going to apportion these minutes out so that we're not burning Osakowski 38 minutes a game because we know how that works out. Or we're trying not to run Coleman 40 minutes a game because we know how that works out. So it's going to be, they're going to be tinkering, and they're going to be tinkering when they go to Baylor. They're going to be tinkering when they go to Iowa State or when they have Iowa State come here. They're probably going to still be tinkering some when it comes to Tech. Although that one may just be just fucking throwing whatever against the wall because Tech is no joke. The last four or five games of the season is going to be, or the last four games of the regular season is going to be them experimenting a lot.
I wonder if they do actually go big. That might be the best idea to do, but I wonder if they do. Here's a quick question for you, Johnny. Do you have the stats up from the last game? If you don't pull them up.
Okay.
Who took the most shots last game?
I want to say Fabrez.
He did. He took 15 shots. All of them are threes. The next up guy, it went Matt Coleman with 12, Courtney Raymond with 10, Osakowski with 9. So Jace Fabrez this year has averaged about 24 minutes a game. Last game he had 35. So yeah. I think without Roach, Fabrez has now joined the 30 club, the 30 minute, you're a full-time starter, you're not the sixth guy off the bench club. And
probably
they're going to be relying on Fabrez to actually hit shots. He's not bad, but you know, if from a guy whose job is solely to hit threes, you're hoping for more than 33% on 15 shots.
Yeah. I mean, he's a 36-37% three-point shooter, you know, for most of the year. He's kind of vacillated between 35-40% through the year. And so that means when you look statistically at it, 5 of 15, that's the most likely outcome of 15 shots. And it's not ideal, but it's sort of when you have a guy who is a good shooter but not an elite shooter, that's about where he ends up.
So but I don't know if you can rely on Jace Fabrez to be that important to your team. I think your idea of having to go big with Royce Ham, who...
Well, I think Ham does some things well. Like, you cannot question his motor. He definitely tries his ass off. His effort is definitely there. He has a, at least from what we have seen on the court this season, he has a sort of throwback game. Like, he feels a little Shaq Clair-ish to me in that he has a sort of below the rim post game that has its uses. Like, I'm not knocking the guy, but he's also really good at basket interference. He seems to be really good at blocking a shot about a third of a second too late. He's really good at getting offensive fouls for moving screens. So there's sort of there's
give and take, but yes, I think is. You have to spread out your risks with these players. So you know, Jace Fabrez.
Diversify your bonds.
Exactly. You need to diversify your risks with this team. Sort of take a business-like approach where if you're not going to have a guy who, I guess he's not reliable, but you know that he can he can at least get you, 10 points a game? You need to find a guy on this team who can reliably play all around the court, not just shooting from the three. Or at least if he does, you need to figure out a way to maximize his ability.
Is your theory here that Royce Ham is going to score us 10 points a game?
No. Jace Fevers is a risk if you play him for 35 minutes.
Sure. He absolutely is. Like, that's...
If you can find somebody else to put in there, whether that's Jericho Sims, Royce Ham, figure out some way to limit your risks on the court with either big play down low, taking away the importance of a three shot that's really kind of been dogging you all year long, then that could be it. They need to figure out some way to reduce the risks of having a guy who, I don't know if he really should be your fifth starter, being your fifth starter.
Well, that's okay. So as someone whose personal financial strategy is all about reducing risk, I'm very sympathetic to this idea. However, I'm going to say that...
you can't put all your eggs in Jace Fevers.
No, but that's... I mean, here's the thing. It's in an ideal world, he is this super sub who comes in, shoots 6 to 8 threes a game, and hits 35 to 40% of them, and it's worth it. We're not in territory right now. And the two guys you have mentioned as alternatives, Jericho Sims and Royce Ham, don't shoot the ball, really. Ham shoots from within 10 feet. He plays spotty screens. He's good at rebounding, which is good. So maybe you use him to offset some Osakowski's minutes so that he's not running 38 minutes a game. Like, I guess what we're getting at is like where earlier this season, there were a group of guys who several of them sort of were, I don't want to call them interchangeable, but they had multiple skill sets. With a guy like Roach out, everyone gets shifted up a spot. And so the guys on the bench who had sort of limited skill sets, whether it was Sims and his limited offensive ability or Ham and his limited offensive ability or Hayes and his limited offensive ability. Like
Hayes has some offensive ability. Come on.
He is very good at a very specific set of skills. Okay, he is Liam Neeson in Taken. The problem is you take Liam Neeson in Taken and put him at the Statue of Liberty when nothing's going wrong and he doesn't know what the fuck to do.
I was thinking more of like you take Liam Neeson and you put him on a crab boat and you say, take control here.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. 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 Put him in the movie The Perfect Storm, but he's still the character from Taken. And he's like, I don't know what True North is. So that is Jackson Hayes at the 3-point line. When you get into the bench, you get into guys who have limited skill sets and they do, you know, one or two or maybe even three things reasonably well. They're not elite at anything. And so you're doing a lot of cost benefit analysis.
That's like, what I'm saying. You have to figure out where your benefits are. I guess if Fevers is literally your best player out of all those and can do everything, then sure. But
he shot
15 shots last game. They're all from three. Yeah, he had 15 points, was the highest scorer on the team, but he's a reason that Texas had 31 threes.
Sure. And that is all fair. And it is at this point we're opening up the spreadsheets and we're doing risk analysis. So, and that is all fair to talk about. The thing is like, okay, Fabris hits one more of those. Texas wins the game. He's 6 of 15 instead of 5 of 15. They win by a point. So he is the higher risk, higher reward option there, but he has the higher upside of any of those guys. Like Ham, I'm not shitting on the guy. Like, I do really like his effort. He seems bought in. He seems like he's trying, you know, he goes for rebounds hard. Like he does things. But in terms of offense, he's basically a less athletic Hayes. Like he does putbacks. He has some moves around the basket a little bit, but outside of the paint, he's not really going to scare anybody. So, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, if you're going to have him in, you might as well, you better be resting Hayes, I guess. Like he's sort of got, he has a limited skill set, and that's not a bad thing for a sophomore. That's sort of what a lot of sophomores are. But that's where we are when we're discussing how to replace Roach, is we're discussing how to replace these guys who all have limited skill set, or how to replace this guy who has a much less limited skill set with a series of guys who have more specific roles on this team.
Well, I guess you kind of turned my impression around here. Jace Febres is the best you can do in a bad scenario right now.
That is my you know, 3-star Yelp review of Jace Febres.
Okay.
I like him for a little bit amount of money. Like not for $400 a night, but for like $150. Good deal.
So speaking of Oklahoma and him hitting one more shot and they win, didn't happen. They lose by 2 points on a last second shot. I mean, honestly, it looked terrible most of the entire game except for like the very end when they just went on a scoring tear. With what, 8 minutes left, I believe, and that kind of stopped around 3 minutes left. So 5 minutes, they just like offensive explosion. The rest of the game was just like,
well,
but I mean, the question is, I'm not going to go into, you know, how they played or whatever. The question is, does it actually matter that they lost this game? Like, does it actually hurt their chance? It kind of hurts their chance of the tournament, but like, I honestly would rather be a 10 seed than a 9 seed.
At this point, I'm for whatever keeps Texas out of being the 8-9 game in Tennessee's bracket, because I'm not emotionally equipped to handle that situation. So, 10 seed's fine. It sucks because, if you want to look at it from just the Pomeroy point of view, his prediction was Oklahoma 69-67. Like, he nailed that prediction. That was his...
He killed it. That was incredible.
Yeah. Which, you know, good for him. Not good for Texas. The thing is, if Texas wins that game, they have probably salted away their spot in the tournament. Because they're at 8 wins. That's an away win, which probably counts as a quadrant 1 win at this point. So they are looking at worst, an 8-10 finish in the conference, and that's good enough to win in this, or good enough to get in this depleted bubble that they have this year.
Yeah, it's kind of important to realize that this year's tournament is going to be filled with a lot of teams who probably in past years shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I think what I heard Lunardi say recently was that it's not that the bubble is worse, it's that it is much less deep than normal. So there are a lot less alternatives to ponder than in a lot of years. So even with that loss, Texas is still sitting as a 9 seed in most of the brackets you see. In bracket matrix, I want to say they were in like 100 out of 101 brackets or something like that. So there's only one person keeping them out. So it's sort of a... It's an interesting scenario where it's a lost opportunity is really what it is. A road win against another team that is on the bubble, that's a lost opportunity. So it hurts in that
sense.
There
have been a lot of those this year.
Yes. Hence why we're still talking about whether or not Texas is going to make it. It's even more so a lost opportunity because of what has happened with Roach since then, or prior to that, because... If they could have pulled out that win without Roach, then they're sort of playing with house money in terms of getting into the NCAA tournament. At that point, it's them trying to figure out or trying to make their way into, you know, realistically, they're between an 8-10 at this point, depending on where you look. And they don't really have much upside beyond that unless they go on some sort of crazy run we're not expecting. It doesn't matter in that it is not a disqualifying loss, but it does matter in terms of lost potential, in terms of building a resume that gets them further into quote unquote lock status.
if you really want a kick in the dick, which knowing you, Johnny, I know that's your thing. It's really, really a kick in the dick when we're talking about potential to see that Texas's biggest loss this year comes from Michigan State by 10 points, and they were up in that game. Mm. Like every other game, they have six other 12 losses under 4 points. I guess also their second worst loss was UGA by 10, but
that game never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, I feel that.
I'd like it noted for the record, I'm pretty sure as of this taping, Georgia has not won a game since then.
Let's see. Let's make sure that's correct.
It was as of this weekend.
No, they have not won a game. Wow. Wow. Okay,
yeah.
That's a kick in the dick.
Yeah. Texas has now cursed Georgia in two different sports.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
take that,
nice.
Ugga.
So while it does hurt, while it's, you know, it's another lost opportunity for Texas, it doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't, you know, it's nice to beat Oklahoma in basketball, but I don't get the same despondent feeling I do when they lose in football.
I'm on the other end of this, but I understand why I'm in the minority here. Like right. I think of Eduardo Nájera and I still want to beat his ass, even though I'm sure that if we were in an actual bar fight, he would destroy me because he is a former D1 basketball player whose reach is probably the foot longer than mine. So, you know, it sucks to lose to Oklahoma in any sport. But yeah, in terms of overall season trajectory, it doesn't really change things much.
Meh. I guess it makes the Big 12 look better.
Yeah.
But that brings us to our next three-game stretch. And this is probably a pretty important three-game stretch for Texas, but it's also one of the more difficult ones for Texas this year. You have Baylor on the 27th. You have Iowa State 3 days after that. And then you have Texas Tech 2 days after that. At Texas Tech and at Baylor, which are two really difficult places to play.
Mm-hmm.
So Texas is, you know, in search of 9 wins over the next 4 games. It's going to be difficult to get those, especially without Corbin Roach. But, Johnny, let's become optimists for a second.
Ooh. All right.
Ready?
All right.
Best case scenario is obviously Texas wins all 3 of these games. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah,
you know, pie in the sky, sure. Texas wins 3 games in a row. How does this happen? Like, what needs to happen for this to happen? Like, what does Texas need to do? I know we could go with the thing of Texas Tech gets hit by a meteor, so they forfeit. But let's go ahead and say, what does Texas do to get this?
I was thinking of something
besides
much
show
more,
up after the meteor.
I was thinking of much more realistic things like PJ Tucker gets his year of eligibility back and comes in and plays with the team. That would be pretty great. I can't build a plausible path to 3-0 because of that Tech game. There, it's for them to do that. Tech is wrecking people right now. And what's interesting is that their offense has finally really started to kick things into gear. Like they were a terrible offensive team for a significant portion of the year. But it seems like they've sort of figured out that if they, I don't want to say take the ball out of Culver's hands, but they don't have him bring the ball up as much. They don't, they get him the ball on the move and so that the defenses aren't as focused on him. I think is it Moretti maybe, I think is the guy that they've got handling the ball for the most part these days. So if they have truly unlocked their offense, and it's somewhat of a small sample size, you know, that's, it's been the last 4 or 5 games that they've done this. If they've actually unlocked their offense like this, then they are definitely like in the running to win the Big 12. And they might be the team out of the Big 12 most likely to make noise. So you add that in with Texas going to Tech, and that's a tall order. I mean, frankly, that's just a tall order with, you know, with or without Roach, that's a tall order. So for me, the question here is, if Texas can go at least 1-3 in their last four, they are probably safe to make it into the final, into the NCAA tournament. You know, it would always help for them to do better at the conference tournament to win a game or two. But in terms of the next three games, the most likely to me is...
We'll get into the most likely.
Okay.
But I wanted best case scenario.
Oh, best case. So best case for me, like, and I'm using air quotes, which you can't see because it's a podcast, but air quotes, realistic, plausible case for me is 2-1. I just don't see a path to 3-0 with this team's sort of relative lack of consistency and the fact they're dealing without Roach or dealing with a team that may be without Roach. It's just, I don't see 3-0.
I tell you how they get to 3-0.
This is definitely
they have a Georgia like versus Texas type game where they hit 70% from three and 78% from the free throw and then 66% overall.
I predict Texas will win every game where they shoot 70% from three.
Yeah.
That seems fair.
Like Tyler Crump has been shooting, what is it? He shot six threes per game, hitting about 38%. That game, he shot 6-for-8.
Yeah.
So, you know, cool 75% from three.
Yeah, in that game that didn't happen.
If Texas can get that out of Jace Febres, like, okay. Like, maybe they have a chance against Texas Tech in Tech.
Well, that's basically what they did against K-State. I mean, right? In Manhattan, that's how they beat them, as they went nuts from three.
Right. So if they can pull off a game like what they did against Kansas State in Manhattan, then I guess they have a chance. And sure. That's your best case scenario, because you go to Baylor, you have a good game. Iowa State here is probably a more winnable game, at least according to Vegas and according to KenPom and all those guys. It's a winnable game for Texas. And then Texas Tech, you have to go like balls to the wall with your 3-point shots.
Yeah, if you can get Chris Beard to go out to a massage parlor with Robert Kraft, then maybe this happens.
An outside influence?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I understand.
Get Chris Beard to Jupiter, Florida, and we've got a chance.
Okay. And here's what's more likely to happen. It really sucks Tim isn't here, because now we have a pessimist and less of a pessimist, but still a pessimist here on the show.
Wait, you which guys of us is which?
No, yeah, exactly. The audience can decide who's who. But worst case scenario, what's more likely to happen? Texas goes 0-3.
Mm.
How does that happen, Johnny? You know, just paint that picture for me.
I'm going to assume that Matt Coleman and Courtney Ramey go out to the South Congress Bridge to see the bats at sunset, and while they're standing there, several dozen bats mistake them for food, and they both get rabies, and they miss the next couple of games. That seems like a pretty surefire path.
Let's do a realistic scenario now.
What is that not real? Okay, all right.
I mean, you know, it's pretty realistic, but like, let's go with basketball scenario. How about
look,
that?
Look, I've been in
the bats are in DK are in Frank Irwin Center. You know.
Okay. Fair enough.
And that happens. But
look, I have a Facebook group that is devoted to bats and their rabies. So this seems very plausible to me.
Let's take rabies out of the picture here.
Okay. All right. Rabies is out of the picture.
No rabies.
You really
no
limited
bats.
My playbook here, man. So I think the easiest thing here is that if a team limits Texas from getting into the paint, which opens up basically the rest of their offense, and they become overly reliant on the three, they become very beatable. So I expect you're going to see, as you've seen in recent games, there's going to be a fair amount of zone, maybe less so with Tech than the others. Although Tech does this sort of interesting pseudo zone where they play zone for a few seconds, then switch to man, which is sort of an interesting thing. Texas is going to have to beat some zone to beat these teams. Especially Baylor, because the 1-3-1 is still their base defense, even though they've played more man this year than normal. Tech is very sound defensively. They're the best defense in the country probably. So I'm sure they're going to have plenty of wrinkles to screw with Texas. So it is going to be about Texas figuring out a way to attack zone defense and to get into the paint. Because if they can't do that, they're not going to win any of these three games.
I agree.
Thank you.
Texas, no worries. I'm sure that me agreeing with you is high praise.
It is.
But
it is. I'm going to take the rest of the podcast off.
If Texas is limited to just shooting threes, then they're screwed. That's it. I think if you get unreliable play from Courtney Ramey, a la what he did against Oklahoma, where he went 0 for, I believe it was 6 or 7 on the game, with him having to be one of your more, you know, what the guy who you're going to have to rely on for offense, probably with Curran Roach out, then you're screwed. What happens here is Texas finds out, oh, wow, we really do need Curran Roach more than we thought we did. We need somebody who can drive the paint because we don't really have anybody who can do that at least well and still be a threat to take it to the basket to get our offense going. So if they figure that, if they find that out and they have to either rely on set play shots from three rather than drive to pass out to three, then they're screwed.
Yeah, none of the guys that are left shoot threes well off the bounce. Like,
right.
Febres is probably the best of the group, but it's still... and honestly, Roach was not great at it, but he was better at the sort of single dribble under, you know, over when a
crazy
when
they did shot sort of, that happens to go in.
Well, it was more the pick and roll where his defender goes under the screen and he would take one dribble to the right or left and shoot. Like, right. Right. That Roach did fairly well. Ramey does that pretty well, but he's still a freshman, so he's a little he's less consistent with it. But yeah, outside of those, I don't think there's anybody on this team that needs to be taking, you know, Steph Curry dribble threes.
All right, now let's go ahead and move on to the realistic expectation for Texas over these next three games. If we look at Vegas and we look at KenPom, Texas is probably 1-2 over these next three games. Baylor is a hard place to play. Tech is a very hard place to play. And Iowa State is up and down this year. And being at home, Texas is sort of favored there as well. It helps out a little bit. ESPN gives Texas a 56% chance here. I don't know what KenPom does, but I would agree
with
that.
It's pretty close.
I would agree with that. I think Texas had like a 55% shot at this game, just better than a coin flip at winning. Here's my thought is, you know, realistic expectation here is a 1-2 finish over this next three games stretch. And if you beat TCU, you're 9-9. That's great. If you don't, you're 8-10 and okay, whatever. Do well in the tournament. But you're still into the March Madness.
Yeah, I think 1-2 is the most plausible outcome of the next three. Maybe I am overrating Iowa State, or underrating Baylor, but I tend to think Texas matches up well with Baylor, and I feel like that game in Waco is more likely than the game at home against Iowa State. Not by much. Like they're sort of, they're sort of in the same category for me. They're both pretty similar to each other in terms of they're both kind of coin flip games, toss-up games, if you will. But it's still, you know, maybe I just really want to beat Baylor again. That's entirely possible that I just
sweep
really,
Baylor.
Just really want to fucking watch Scott Drew have to frown his way through a post game. Both of those games are winnable. I would not necessarily say Texas is favored in either of them, without Roach. If he comes back,
they have to replace a guy who's averaged 31 minutes a game. That's going to be difficult.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's the leading scorer. He averaged 31 minutes a game. Like that's a big thing to replace. And expectations should be revised downwards until you find out he's coming back. So
right.
With that said, I feel like Baylor is the more winnable of the two out of them and Iowa State, although it is fair to consider the fact that Texas plays significantly better at home than on the road. So, you know, I kind of put them, that's why I put them in the same bucket as they're both sort of coin flip games to me. The Tech game, you know, last year you saw that Texas was able to play in Lubbock against a Tech team with Keenan Evans. They played them really close. And if Matt Coleman makes one or two out of three free throws at the end, Texas probably wins that game.
Hey, I mean, so, Texas gets up for away games that are, or they get up for big games. Like
without Roach, it's going to be a really hard sell convincing me that Texas has a realistic shot at that game.
How Texas would this be to lose to Baylor, lose to Iowa State, and beat Texas Tech?
Yeah, that would be very Texas to go 1-2 in the most unpredictable way possible. And honestly, if they do that, they're in the NCAA tournament because they have just taken out a team that is, you know, I think I want to say they're a 4 or 5 seed in some of the brackets I'm seeing now. So like they go to Lubbock and win that game, then they're in the tournament because their resume is just too good at that point. Yeah, I mean, I'm still going to say 1-2 is the most plausible. 0-3 would not surprise me. 2-1 might surprise me a little, but I think it's really a question. 3-0,
Texas fans should go get lottery tickets.
Yeah, if they're 3-0, yeah, don't get lottery tickets because you burn through all your luck at that point.
True, true.
Yeah, yeah. That's avoid at it. That point. At that point, go hole up in a bunker because something bad is about to happen. It's like, you know, like Sam Ellinger murder suicide is coming right around the corner because you're just not going to get that kind of luck. So yeah, it's yeah. I would say 1-2, which gets them
God.
To.
What if they actually go 3-0 and this podcast goes? Oh God.
Okay. That's fine. Yes. That's fine. I'll take it. I will own that. Be like, I'm the guy who predicted Ellinger's ACL tear. yeah. So
I'm staying away from that.
Yeah.
Don't put that juju on me.
Yeah, yeah, don't. Yeah, I won't put that evil on you, Ricky Bobby. Yeah, so 1-2, they're 8-9 with a home game against TCU left, and that's a reasonable place to be if your goal is to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, so we're done, right? That's about it.
I think so.
Nothing more to say. All right, cool. Yeah, I think we're getting off there though. Thank you for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
You can find me on Barking Carnival. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram and Discord at Bitter White Guy. I have taken up Pinterest. No, I haven't. I haven't taken up Pinterest.
I was going to say, what's your Pinterest page? What's on there?
I don't know enough about Pinterest to answer any of those questions. So I'm just gonna be honest. I'm not on there.
I tried it for a second, and I was like, nah.
All I know is that they really screw up my Google search results.
Yeah, they really do. The pictures as well. Yeah. No. My girlfriend wanted me to do that for gift ideas and whatever, and I was like, nah.
I'm like, I'm just looking for Jessica Alba's boobs. Like, get off my page, man.
Get the fuck away from me, Pinterest. But Johnny. I know Tim isn't here, but where in the world is Timothy Preston? I'm going to put in him over this.
Thank you. Thank you, because it just doesn't feel right otherwise.
1, 2, 3, yeah!
Tim is dead. We wanted to make it a suspension thing and then sort of, you know, break the news next week, but he's dead. He's just dead.
He's living dead. He's living dead. He's a zombie actually at this point.
No, he's dead. In Iowa, nothing reanimates because it's like -8 there right now. So actually he cosplays as an armadillo from time to time. And, much like every armadillo
in Texas. But most of the
time
he's dead.
Yeah. No. What happened was he was wearing his armadillo outfit.
Oh, I see.
And he's very committed to the role. And so he was crossing the street and saw a car and was like, oh, cosplay. And he did his cosplay opportunity. And he rolled up and they just ran the fuck over him. So he's dead.
He pulled the Remy Gaillard? I don't know. I'm terrible with names. You know what I'm talking about? The French comedian who dressed up as a snail and trudged across the road. But instead of getting across the road successfully, he got run over.
Oh, nice. That's very French of him.
Yeah, very French. Very French of you, Tim. If you rest in peace.
Yeah. You can see his memorial page on Twitter at Inside Texas Hoop. No S.
No S.
And the only way he is getting all up in somebody's fucking face is when his splatter hits the front windshield. So that's...
I was going to say grave robbers, but that was a lot darker. That was a lot darker.
You're welcome. This is what I bring here. I bring the darkness.
But you guys can find us in our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, Overcast, wherever you guys find your podcast, you'll find the Hornscast.
I'm convinced that at least three of those are actually video games.
Probably.
I like Podbean because it reminds me of vagina.
Thank you for pretending we were football. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.